Let's talk. John Brown. My next guest is talking about Scotland's North Highlands, plus Inverness. It is the latest title in Brad's series of distinctive, widely acclaimed slow travel guides. And it's written by, quote unquote, a North Scotland specialist. So here, resplendent in tartan, with a live haggis next to her, in a Scottish outpost, is the author of Scotland's North Highlands. And it's Emma Gibbs. Emma, good morning to you.
Hi, nice to be here. Well, over the radio.
Exactly. Now, for those who are expecting a Glaswegian, you like hen, yeah. I like hen, that sort of thing. A North Scotland special. Which part of Scotland are you in today, Emma?
Yeah, I'm in sunny South Oxfordshire.
Indeed.
I always feel like I'm a bit of a disappointment when I open my mouth.
Well, you know, are they expecting sort of Highlander or something when they speak to you?
Oh, no, not another English person saying that she knows stuff about Scotland, yeah.
So tell us a little bit about yourself as well and why you're qualified to write about the old enemy.
Well, So the Highlands, or the North Highlands in particular, have been a kind of enduring love affair for me. Somewhere that I'll admit that I was relatively late getting there, but it was on a family holiday with my kids that we kind of took a slow journey around the North Coast. We weren't doing the North Coast 500, but we did kind of parts of it. And it just really kind of, I feel like it's one of those places that really kind of grabs hold of you and doesn't let go. Or certainly that's what happened to me. And then kind of by luck, as well as anything else, it kind of wove its way into my career. I was asked to do a book about the North Coast 500, which I spent a while researching.
And what's the North Coast 500? It sounds like a motorbike race, like, you know, the Isle of Man CT. So
well, this is what the North Highlands is probably most well known for these days. The North Coast 500 is a 516-mile road trip, which begins and ends in Inverness, and it basically traces the north coast of far northern Scotland. And so it started 10 years ago, well, was launched 10 years ago, but obviously the roads there existed before the road trip was kind of marketed as such. And so in some ways it's been great for the region. It's kind of opened up to people. People know more about it, know that there's beautiful beaches and mountains and old villages and everything. But it also means that people treat it a bit like a race. So 516 miles doesn't sound like very much, but in the Highlands it is. Yeah, it takes a long time. There are roads that people are obviously using to go about their daily business. You might get stuck behind a tractor. Some of the roads are single track. You know, they very much lend themselves to taking your time. But a lot of people just kind of see a list of places and go, okay, I'm going to tick off this beach, this castle. And, you know, I've seen it for myself. People stopping the car, getting out, taking a photo, driving on to the next place.
The curse of Instagram and social media, like that.
No, well, that's exactly it. And it's obviously frustrating for the residents because infrastructure wasn't put into place to kind of manage the number of people who started coming in. And a lot of people have heard about the fact that you can wild camp in Scotland, which means camping with a tent. But a lot of people do it in their motorhome, just kind of parking up in a lay-by and then depositing waste. Obviously, not everyone does it, but these are kind of the stories that you hear. Okay. From locals.
I mean, just for those who don't know, because if you don't know Scotland, your kind of idea is maybe sort of Outlander, train spotting, Highlander. So you think Glasgow, Edinburgh, Harry Potter, you know, and then you'll think, okay, Aberdeen, Oyle, Inverness, Fort William, that bit up there. So we're talking about explain where the Highlands are for those who aren't natives of Scotland, it's a sort of woolly term, isn't it, I suppose, really?
Yeah. Well, the Highlands as a whole, there's basically, I can't remember what it's called now, of course. I think it's the Highlands Fault Line or something, but there's a kind of a diagonal line that cuts across Scotland. So it's about an hour and a half maybe north of Edinburgh. And it kind of everything, you get into like Perthshire and then into Highland Perthshire, and everything kind of north of there is the Highlands. So for the purposes of this book, my book covers basically everywhere north of Inverness and north of the Isle of Skye in the west.
Right.
So we're talking about the very, very northern part. It's kind of, so I think if you were, it's a really, because there is kind of this diagonal that the Highlands is on, there's kind of, it's I can envision it in my head.
Yeah, I think we all fair enough. No,
get out your map, everyone.
Get out your map, everyone. The interesting thing is, I think what you picked up on there was, it's a trend that we're seeing, and you know, I'm sitting here in a studio in Southern Spain, and we do have good Scottish weather at the moment. It's about to pelt it down, but it's this. It's this tendency that we're seeing of people to regard a holiday as a checklist, as things to be done, and things to be done quickly, and also that whole thing about wild camping and thinking that the kind of everywhere, if it's a tourist area, is a theme park. Yeah. Now, explain the concept of slow travel and respect for the communities and the environment, if you can.
Yeah, well, so slow travel, and especially in terms of this range of books, is about slowing down, taking your time to get to know a place. So we're not really encouraging people to necessarily use the whole guidebook in their trip, but to focus on areas, take their time, you know, stay somewhere for a week or two, really get to know a place. In other parts of the UK, the emphasis is a bit more on public transport. Obviously, there's an issue with the Highlands insofar as, you know, there's parts which you can get around very easily by transport, others where you'd be waiting for like 3 days for a bus. So I've obviously had to kind of scale back on that. But yeah, it's very much, it's so that, and the difference with this kind of guidebook as opposed to like A Lonely Planet is it's much more in depth. So there's not just a tiny bit of text on each place, and hopefully in that it encourages people to slow down. It's also about getting to know local people, speaking to local people, so you know, I've got interviews with people in the book to kind of, and you know, people who are doing interesting things, to try and help people engage with things, you know, locally made beer, you know, people who are running night sky trips, you know, anyone who's kind of doing something that helps, that tourists can engage with, but also helps them to kind of really interact with the landscape and communities that they're in.
And it's an interesting one as well, because I mean, because I'm not going to go back into history because otherwise we'll be here all week, but I mean, obviously traditionally the Highlands, it was depopulated. I think that's the easiest way we can say it without getting involved with the with the clearances and everything. So is it the sort of place where if you want solitude, you know, there's not going to be a mad crowd per se, and you will find that if you pull into villages, you know, the welcome is normally a sort of like, hello, what are you doing here? Even if it's a very high pitched. And for those who think that Scottish is all like, you know, is all gruff Glaswegians and Begbie, the Highlands accent and the cadence of the voice can be quite surprising, because it's rather high like this.
Yeah, but also I would say actually what surprises me about a lot of Highlanders is there's a lot of kind of softly spoken people there, but yeah, it's, I think there are still a lot of places up there where people will kind of be like, oh, you've stopped here, why have you stopped here, you know, there are definitely places where people are like, oh my goodness, you know, more tourists, but it's not hard to find those less visited places. It's definitely not hard to find solitude. You know, I mean, obviously going out on foot is the easiest way to do that. Just walking, you know, along the coast or in the hills, you know, it's not hard to find space to yourself. But even, you know, the exception, I guess, is kind of peak summertime, when you will find a lot of tourists in a lot of places. But like a lot of the people are there to do the North Coast 500, and they kind of whiz along the East Coast in particular because they see it as being a bit boring. And that very much, that's Caithness, and that's very much somewhere that you need to kind of get out and explore to find the places and kind of delve a bit deeper to find the places that are worth seeing. And then you're kind of rewarded by having places entirely to yourself, and really feel like you've kind of stumbled onto a secret, which is great. And locals will tell you about these places as well.
I mean, one of the other things about this is that, you know, the scenery is spectacular. You know, I've got friends who work in, you know, TV, you know, advert production, and they're forever because of the roads and the emptiness and whatever. They're forever heading up there because of the wilds and everything. And okay, it's picture perfect. You know, it's picture pretty when you've got the right weather, and even when it's dark for birding clouds, it's pretty damn spectacular. So that's, you can kind of do that. But as with everything else, because of the history that is there, and, you know, the fascinating legends, because it's, you know, it's Celtic, it's even Pictish if you want, and you've got Gaelic and the whole thing. If you've done a little bit of research before you head up there, it's going to be so much more rewarding.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So how do you get all the legends and the true stories and then the exciting myths and, you know, Tartan left, right and centre? So how do you sort of boil that down? Because otherwise this book could be the size of the Tibetan Book of the Dead, volume 15.
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, it definitely, was not as big as it could have been. But, I mean, the nice thing about these slow guys is it's very much author led. So I've kind of been able to focus on the things that have really kind of grasped my personal attention. I really enjoyed is the wrong word to use in terms of the Highland clearances, but I really kind of liked learning about the Highland clearances because you still see the effect of it everywhere in terms of, you know, old derelict buildings or crumbling remains. And so for me, that was something that really, I kind of really explored. And it's a mixture of kind of reading in advance, finding the best places to go and see it for myself, and kind of honing down that information. You know, I mean, the great thing about Scotland is in so many historic places, even tiny little places, you'll stop by the side of the road and there'll be a display board about a myth to do with this. You know, there's, you know, rambling castle ruins, and it will say, oh, here's the myth of the mermaid in the loch. And so you can read about that. And then obviously from my point of view, I then go off and research it further. But there's all these kind of little tidbits that just spark off your imagination and lead you down other routes.
And the other thing is, because you kind of think in the British Isles that it's all been done, it's all been packaged. You know, there's a theme park, there's a gift shop, there's a fast food outlet near. But this is wild. This is pretty much untouched and untamed, and that can be quite a shock for a lot of people. And especially, but also they have to be careful because again, there is that tendency to think everything is a theme park, and so therefore you can go in a pair of Crocs and a cagoule and you'll be fine. But you've got to be kind of prepared, haven't you? Even on a journey like this.
Yeah, I think that's all really true. And I think, you know, it surprised me even going to John O'Groats for the first time, which I thought, well, this is going to be the place where there's loads of tourist tat and everything because it's, you know, the end of the route. And even that, you know, it was just kind of a couple of small shops and, you know, the coaches pile in and people take photos and then they go off. There's basically nothing there. I feel like in any other part of the UK, you'd have kind of Kiss Me Quick hats and everything else.
I went to the Highlands and all I got was this t-shirt.
So maybe that will change, and you do have to be prepared, like in terms of the weather, and being, you know, it can be in one day you can have beautiful sunshine, it does happen in Scotland, and you can have torrential rain or a blizzard. You know, it's having, and that's why having a car is really helpful because you can have loads of stuff in the car every time. And it's also, you know, but yeah, the theme park thing is really relevant. I think it's remembering that even though it feels wild and the communities might be few and far between, people still do live there. It's not just somewhere that's put there for our pleasure of looking at. And I think that's where people go wrong, is maybe seeing it like a playground rather than like somewhere.
What about I'm a history buff, so that's me. Mm-hmm. That's me sorted, the whole thing. and a friend of mine married a girl from Kentucky and took her over to that particular part of the world, and she spent the whole time just going, this is, you know, blowing her mind because obviously a castle that's been there for coming up to basically 900 years is quite something. What about the sort of, if you're into your flora and your fauna, I mean, what sort of things are you going to, I mean, are we going to see wildcats? We're going to see an awful lot of sheep, aren't we? Let's get that one out of the way.
Yeah, it will be sheep. You will have to slow down for them. Wild goats on the West Coast. You won't see wildcats yet, mm-hmm. although there is a wilderness reserve, Allerdale Wilderness Reserve, where they are breeding wildcats to be released. But at the moment, I think they're mainly being released in the Cairngorms, which is a bit further south. You'll see, it's all about luck But you've got quite a good chance of seeing
Yeah.
dolphins in the South, especially dolphins. You might see orcas. You could see humpbacks if you're very, very lucky. I mean, there's and minke whales as well. In the skies, you could see golden eagles, white-tailed or sea eagles. Trying to think what else. I mean, red stags, you're quite likely to come across. Well, I mean, and in fact, there's three types of deer that live up there, but red stags are obviously the really majestic ones that you
Yeah.
associate with Scotland. And you can, there are certain parts, like, I mean, some places like Loch Inver, which is a small village but quite a touristy centre. I mean, touristy in the Highlands way. You like every time I've been there, I've seen stags in the village. Like sometimes just kind of jumping out in front of me in the middle of the night when I've been walking walking down the road.
You said that there's obviously it's not good for public, it's not great for public transport, so you'd be driving along yourself or whatever. How much preparation do you need to do? Because you can't, it's not like, going into Glasgow or one of the satellite towns. So what about sort of staying in? Because you don't want to be thundering around in a motorhome the whole time. So are we talking bed and breakfasts? Are we talking small hotels? I mean, how much, it's a sort of journey that obviously you plan. You don't just head north and think, well, we'll find something, as darkness falls, because otherwise you're in that American werewolf in London scenario in terms of where are we? Where can we possibly stay?
No, absolutely. You do. I think this is a mistake that a lot of people have made in the past. Is you do need to plan. You can't. I mean, especially in the summer months, because places get booked up very easily. Even and campsites get very, very busy if you're in a motorhome of some sort. Especially the ones that are in really kind of scenic places, like, there are clifftop campsites. But yeah, there are bed and breakfasts and hotels. There's a few fancy hotels. There's kind of, more run-of-the-mill hotels. There's kind of the whole range of accommodation, but it can be quite spread out. So you do need to plan where you're going to stop
And
in.
culture-wise, I mean, we all know Highland Games because the royal family are up there, looking interesting in their tartan. But I mean, are there culture events apart from obviously the Highland Games, which is going to be the big one? It's going to be very touristy. Everybody's up there. But are there other sort of cultural events that were quite surprising? I mean, what is there things to check out during? Because you're going to be doing this during the summer months, because during the winter months, with the greatest of respect, unless you are testing the limits of your wet weather gear, there's no such. Billy Connolly said there's no such thing as bad weather, there's just inappropriate clothing, and that is 100% true in the area we're talking about.
Oh, absolutely. That is basically what I live by when I'm in the Highlands. And I would argue that winter is, can be hard work, but when it's beautiful, I mean, when the weather is dry, at least, it is absolutely stunning, and you've got it all to yourself. But yeah, no, they're all kind of little events. A lot of them are quite, specific to that village, and so you might have to go searching a little bit. They're not going to be publicized all over the internet necessarily, but one particular highlight that could be worth seeing is Luggerfest in Ullapool, which is kind of a big celebration of boats.
Luggerfest, not Lagerfest.
No, not Luggerfest. Please don't get overexcited at Lagerfest. Luggerfest. So it's lots of boats, lots of locally made boats take to the water. So that's a really special one. And as always, with kind of any festival, you can be guaranteed that there's going to be music. There's a lot more happening, obviously, around Inverness. So there's quite a few music festivals that are coming up around there. There's one, a new one, I think it's called the Black Isle. It's either the Black Isle Festival or Black Isle Calling, and it's run in conjunction with or by the Black Isle Brewery. So there's lots of good beer and lots of good music.
Because Inverness is quite startling international, because I've lots of Kiwis and Aussies and South Africans doing Europe, surprisingly, would go from London and then they would go and do sort of Fort William Inverness for a couple of weeks, just because say, so that they could do the length and breadth, because and for them a sort of 6 hour trip is absolutely nothing. That's where you go and pick up the milk from. So it is surprising. I mean, Inverness is a hub, a centre, isn't it?
No, it is, and I mean, in summer, it just swells completely, and yeah, you're far more likely to hear kind of American voices than you are Scottish. So yeah, it is. I would say summer the height of summer is not the best time to be in Inverness unless you enjoy being kind of shoulder to shoulder with other tourists the whole time.
Yes, indeed. Well, so I've got a week. Come on, I'll put you on the spot, Emma. I've got a week. I've not been. Just give me a quick. I don't want to do the whole 500, but if I've got a week and I've done my planning, and I want to see, I don't know. You want to see a ruined castle on a loch, don't you? You want to see a decent castle on a loch, and a few other bits and pieces that you know get your Rob Roy bit going. So what should I check out? What shouldn't I miss then?
I mean, I would say if you've never been before, then you really want a taste of the classic Highland drama. So I absolutely would not miss Torridon, which is it's a name used for a small village on a loch, but it's also used as the name for the surrounding mountains, and it is absolutely beautiful. The road west out to it from Kinlochhue is just probably the best road in the whole region. It is absolutely stunning. You've got the mountains kind of rising up around you, and you've got, you know, walking, you've got ruined villages, you've got you can go into the hills, but you can also do low level walks. You can see the red deer in the National Trust. You can get out on the water. It's just phenomenal. If you want castles, you can head a bit further north. You've got the ruins of Ardvreck Castle, which is actually on the front cover of the book, which is one of my favourite. It is a ruin. It's small, but the situation is beautiful. You've got views up and down the loch and mountains all around. But if you want a big classic castle, then you need to go to Dunrobin on the east coast, which looks like a French chateau. It's absolutely beautiful and has glorious gardens as well.
The book is called Scotland's North Highlands Plus Inverness Slow Travel. It is one of the excellent books by Brad Travel, guides by Emma Gibbs, who is speaking to you today. Emma, if people want to find you online and say lovely things to you, where is the easiest place to find you?
Probably on Instagram, which I am M-E-M-M Gibbs. I should have chosen an easier one, _words. So that's M Gibbs. _words.
And you'll be able to order the book as well via our own virtual bookstore. The book is called Scotland's North Highlands Plus Inverness. It's by Emma Gibbs. Emma, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you today.
Oh, it's been lovely. Thank you so much.